this is John Curtis, and you're listening to the Beat to Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin and I'm joined by Dan Tracy from TheRealFootballMan.com. You alright, Dan?
Yeah, good, thank you.
And we're delighted to be joined on the line by Sol Isaacson-Hurst. You okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so how are you doing this evening?
Very good, just come back from a night of coaching, so just going to settle down for the evening and looking forward to this interview.
Yeah, so those who don't know, Sol is a football coach with over 10 years of experience in the Premier League academy system with Tottenham and Chelsea. So how did you first get into the game? Was it as a player or was it sort of just being coached?
I sort of went in as a coach. So, I mean, I was at university and I was captain of the team there. And I started coaching the team. And I sort of fell into a job in America coaching. I didn't know what to do after uni. A friend of mine had been out to America coaching and he said, why don't you come out for the summer and try it? And I sort of went out there after uni and sort of fell in love with it and ending up staying there for 2 years. Yeah. And I came back after, eventually, and to do my teacher training. And I got a job at Tottenham Hotspur in the foundation while I was teaching and worked part-time and worked my way up with that club into the academy, fortunately. And I started a company called PDA Football one-on-one during that time and progressed and moved to Chelsea 4 seasons ago working in the academy, and also now I started to have an online coaching business called mypersonalfootballcoach.com. Mm.
So how did you actually get involved with the Premier League academies?
So yeah, I started off coaching, I was doing grassroots, like I said, I was coaching in America, I came back and I was coaching grassroots team and I saw an advert for a job, part-time position at Tottenham Hotspur in the foundation, which used to be called the Community Scheme. And I was lucky at the time because the club was linking, there was an integration plan with the academy, so I started off coaching there and I got noticed and lucky I started, and then I sort of worked my way into the development centres, which is like the academy, where the with the young players, talent identification, it's like the first portal call. When players are identified as being talented, they come in there and we train them and get them ready for a potential trial, and then sort of I work my way up that way.
I've got some questions regarding Tottenham, if you don't mind me asking. As a Spurs fan myself, this is of interest.
Commiserations on that.
Thanks very much. So you spent, was it just under 6 years at Tottenham?
Yeah, well, actually like about 10 years altogether, really. Working in the foundation and working my way out and doing several roles, and then in the academy I spent about 6 years altogether.
Okay, right. So in the academy itself, what would you say the biggest achievements you had in that 6 years?
Biggest achievements I had?
Yeah, sort of from a coaching point of view. Is it sort of anything you can actually
I would say, it was an amazing experience. My biggest achievement was being in that environment itself. I was really proud to be working at such an amazing academy, at such an amazing club. Worked under some amazing people, some amazing coaches, and it really, you know, developed me and my helped evolve my coaching methodology. And you know, I wouldn't be where I am today if I wouldn't have got that opportunity. You know, working with people like Chris Ramsey, you know, who and Daddy Buck, and you know, John McDermott, and these people, you know, really sort of helped, you know, develop my coaching methodology, and you know, I learned so much. So that was probably my greatest achievement, just being there. You know, I'm sort of a specialist. I work with the younger players, so excuse me. So like 9s to 11s or like 8s to 11s. So, you know, the players I worked with at that time are now breaking into, you know, the verge of the first team, but playing for England's, you know, 16s and 17s and stuff like that. So I suppose, you know, my achievement then is being seen now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, in that spell of time, what changes would you have seen, say, from day one till the day you left? Like, did philosophies change? Because obviously there's quite a lot of management overhaul at the club. So if a new manager comes in, is there coaching philosophy throughout the age group? So new man comes in, has different ideas, so you have to sort of change tact to what you're doing? Or is it, do you have a remit to sort of coach with your own ideas?
Well, I think, fortunately, that when I went in, it was when Yol was there. And Arnesen had just left, but I mean, I think what happened is that the cabbie manager was in place, and unfortunately, he's not affected by the change in different managers who were there. So I left just as AVB came in, but I mean, So, you know, but sort of, you know, new managers come in, but there's consistency in the academy, which is important, I think, now. And most academies are doing that rather than chopping and changing academies and philosophies, you know, so having some consistency going through for the players and the different age groups.
Okay, and would you ever liaise with sort of senior management? What was, how far up the chain would you go? Was it like sort of Chris Ramsey level, anything higher than that?
Well, no, because I worked with the younger age groups, so my immediate line manager would be Chris. So, okay. he's the guy I worked under, and, you know, he's the guy I gave my job, in effect, and he's the guy I worked for. He's my immediate, you know, port of call, so that's who I'd mostly liaise with.
And what was the decision to leave Spurs? Was it just sort of the end of a life cycle, done all you could, or...?
Yeah, just the opportunity came up to go somewhere else, and so I've been there, and I'd learned, you know, it's very difficult because I'd enjoyed it there, and it's an amazing club, an amazing academy, and but it's, you know, all, you know, different opportunity came up, so I decided to, you know, to take it, really, try something different.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose that covers the Tottenham portion for now.
That's all right.
So I read that you've worked in academies all over the world. I think you went over to Ajax for a bit.
Well, I mean, I've observed there.
Yeah, observed.
I've been there to look at what they do, several different places around the world, to try and, you know, help develop my own professional, support my professional development. See how where there's different hotbeds, you know, what they're doing. Is there, you know, something which is transferable to English game, or is it not transferable? And, you know, trying to, you know, get some ideas and, you know, see what other people are doing.
So what are the differences you found? Because you said you've worked like in Europe, and then you've worked. Trained over in America. What's the development systems of the...
America is quite unique because, it's all grassroots there.
Yeah.
There's no academy system there. So, I mean, they have like an Olympic development program, but I was there working really with the grassroots club, but they have great, amazing facilities. That's the biggest thing you'll find, is that the investment in the grassroots is good. You know, there's a lot of money spent on good facilities, and you know, there's a lot of respect for coaching out there, and it's a really booming industry, and there's a lot of good young players, but there's no real academy set up there. So that's the only thing with America.
So if you come back over at the youth level in Britain, do you think there's still too much of an emphasis on winning games rather than on technique at the moment, or is it changing?
You know what, it's funny because we had this conversation the other day, is that maybe the issue might be gone too far the other way. We go to Europe and do tournaments, and we play against the big European teams. They're playing, you know, 20 or 30 competitive tournaments a season. So, you know, they're much more used to, conditioned to a highly competitive environment. But we now play, which is good, friendlies every week, which is good for development. But it's a lot different to playing in a competitive environment, you know, when the anxiety levels are a lot more acute, you know, things that really count. But so I think there's got to be a balance there, you know. I think it has changed, you know, when my first experience, so there were a lot of clubs who were playing a lot more direct, maybe, and, you know, seemed like they would do anything to win.
Yeah.
But I think now generally you see, well, the younger age groups, what I see generally most teams, not everybody, but most teams are trying to play what I'd say would be the right way.
So what do you have to say the ratio of technical training to tactical training should be?
I don't know, listen, in my opinion, this is only my opinion, I think when you're working with young players, technique should be the priority. It should be all about technique. And then as you get older, as you get into the 12s, 13s, 14s, then it becomes more about tactics and that sort of thing. But, you know, that's not necessarily across the board. There's a big debate going on in England at the moment where people are saying that it should be more revolved around decision-making, about game-orientated stuff. But, you know, there's many different ways to do things. You know, many people do it different ways and have success, but it's just my personal opinion. I feel that maybe, you know, in the past generations, maybe we haven't produced players technically good as our European or South American counterparts.
Yeah.
Who knows why? There's many possible, you know, reasons for that. But I mean, my thing is, you know, that, you know, we should be producing more technical players. We're a football mad country, you know, 60 odd million people. Football's the number one sport. We should be producing more players, and we are producing players now. So it's about, you know, continuing to do that.
So how intense should training be at a youth level?
How intensive?
Yeah, how intense?
It depends, really. I mean, it depends on the player. Depends on the aspiration of the player, depends on the ability of the player. I mean, it's like anything. You know, if you have a gifted young footballer, you know, and you know they want to support. They want to say, look, I want to get better. You need to support them. You know, if you've got like a, you know, young like a gymnast who's like a elite gymnast, they're training every day.
Yeah.
2 hours a day or something like that. You know, they're doing super hours, same as swimmers. So it's about, you know, how can we, you know, just because it's football, sometimes it's frowned upon, saying, oh, they want to do more. But, you know, just, I think they should do more. Well, it's important to remember they should be doing other sports as well. You know, this is an important part of research we've learned, but still there's no issue with players doing more, you know, more football.
So in the age range you work in, there's like the 8 to 11s.
Yeah.
Is it, do you get put in positions at that age, or...
Unfortunate, but the experience I've had at the clubs I've worked with, it's always been players playing different positions. You know, my personal belief is that I don't believe you should play players in fixed positions at that age group, because
no.
I think it stunts their development. So that's my personal opinion. You know, some clubs do. The PSL clubs pick a player and say, look, that's a defender, we're going to play him at the back. That's fair enough, but for me it's about trying to develop them completely, roundly, holistically, whatever you want to call it, because the reality is you don't know where a player's going to end up. And also, if a player, for instance, plays his whole career as a defender, you know, he's playing with the whole game in front of him. That's different now if he's got to play hard at the pitch with people behind him, and he's got to work, you know, completely as a 360. So, for me, it's a no-brainer. Players should be playing at all positions, and the right and the left, testing their weak side, playing in defence, playing striker, because... You know, I read that.
You don't even know from when he gets into the late teams. I'm sure wasn't Jamie Carragher a striker for most of his youth team, and then Gareth Bale was
Cole was a striker.
Yeah,
there's many stories, but yeah, for me, it's like it's too far to go to pigeonhole a player at 8, 9, 10, or 11 for me.
All right, so we've had a couple of listeners' questions sent in. David asks, at such a young age, what is it that you're looking for in a player that you think that could make a professional footballer?
I think when you're looking at a player, it's about potential. There's many different things you see there. See some players who are just, you know, just very intelligent with the ball, really good. Some players who just really move well. Some players who are just excellent movers. You know, you've got to remember as well, at such a young age, you know, some people have just been playing for a lot longer than other players. So they've got, you know, they might be just better on the ball. So you've got to really look past that and look at, you know, potential, you know, maybe an athletic thing, might be something they're doing while on the ball, their decision making, and look for that. There's no magic recipe, and as many, you know, as we've seen, footballers come in all different shapes and sizes, and it's just about, you know, seeing someone who's got, you know, potential.
Yeah, Cherries FNA asks, how do you combat the difference in physical developments of children?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of thing going now about... biological banding, but I mean that doesn't necessarily solve all the problems, because you might have a player who's born in September who's much smaller than a player born in August. It's really, it's up to the coaches and the clubs to look at different ways. One way is to, you go by maturation, but that means that you go by the actual size of the body. So you go, right, you know, let's have these guys there, they are physically the same at the moment, you know, let them train. And maybe, you know, if you've got players who are under-maturated or aren't as physically developed, there's things like you can maybe play them down in the younger age group, you know, play them with the younger players who are more like that. That's you know, that's not unusual these days. There's several things you can do to try and combat that. But I mean, that is, you know, that is an issue in football.
Ethan asks, what do you think English academies could do better than other countries?
I don't know what, you know, I think English academies get knocked a lot. You know, and the problem is, it's, you know, they're doing some great work. If you look at the England's under-16s and under-17s, you know, you've got some of the best young players in the world there at the moment. You know, these are some of the best young crops coming through. So it's not a question of what we can do there. Also, we've just got to keep on learning, keep on developing, being professional and doing that. But there's a lot of good work going on. The Premier League have introduced a new categorisation system, which ensures, you know, all academies are working to a certain level. So, you know, there's a lot of good work going on, you know, both at clubs and by these organisations. A lot of, you know, the FA are doing a lot of support with new courses and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a lot of good work going on.
Do you reckon there's enough coaches at youth level compared to, say, Spain and Germany? Like, and if there isn't, how does the FA get more people into coaching?
I don't know, to be honest, because I'm not sure of the numbers in Spain and Germany. I've heard this online. People are saying there's a lot more qualified coaches in these countries, but I'm not sure, really.
Is it maybe the cost of doing the badges is maybe prohibitive?
Or do you need
that sort of benchmark quality, because otherwise everyone would be doing it?
I'm not sure. I mean, for me, the more people who do the badge, the better. I mean, I don't see why. I don't personally see a logic in saying let's make it more expensive to keep it out. But I'm not sure, because I'm not 100% sure about the numbers and stuff like that, so I wouldn't be able to comment about that. I'm not sure, really. But listen, I think from what I see, you know, there's a lot, you know, seeing what's happening grassroots. There's some great people volunteering. There's loads of people who's going to go, and honestly, like, you know, whether those people are qualified or not, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so you run your website, mypersonalfootballcoach.com. Who's the service for?
So it's basically, because I've also been working in the Academy of Football for 10 years, and then also I've been a one-on-one football coach for the last 12 years as well. And basically I've worked with a lot of players and developing them on their individual technique and supporting them into academy football, or, you know, just helping to improve their game. So the idea really was to bring some of that knowledge and my experience to the wider, you know, world, as it were, because I used to get so many requests from people in England, and people visit me from all around the world to train with me, do the individual technical training. It was about really how can I sort of, you know, impart my knowledge and my experience to more people. So it's really aimed at players, parents and coaches. So initially players. So the site is set up really so, you know, we got courses for 5 to 7, 8 to 11s, 12 to 16, 17 plus, any player can really pick it up. And it's very simply done. It's just several like videos. It's a, you know, it's a series of different sessions, 20 minutes a day. That's how we've built it. And they can literally set up themselves. You've got some cones, you've got a ball, you've got anything. You can go and set these sessions yourself and do it yourself. So it's really aimed at the players, but also the parents, you know, like you say, I think there's a bit of an information gap about, you know, what should we be doing with our children, you know, whether they're aspiring elite players, girls or boys, both whatever, or they're just players who want to get better. You know, we work a lot with beginner players as well. You know, what should I be doing? How can I technically improve my child or support them? So this is the same, this works for them. This is, you know, an easy thing they can just pick up and say, right, yeah, look, this is, you know, these very simple exercises, do these, and, you know, I'm going to get some good technical benefits from this. And lastly as well, coaches as well, because like you said there is a good point. It's funny because my brother, he's a grassroots coach, and he's same thing, he hasn't really done that many courses, but he's always asking for advice and what we should do in that. And it's about, you know, right, think about this and how to, you know, coach a team in a grassroots level where you've got to juggle the balancing act of, you know, obviously everybody wants to win, but you've got to want to develop the players as well and, you know, make sure it's about long-term development. So that was really, you know, trying to hit those three key areas where I think there was a bit of an information gap.
So you also run PDA football. Can you talk us a bit through that?
Yeah, so that was really, I mean, that was where it all began. PDA Football One-on-One is my personal football coaching company, which we're based in London, South, Essex, Kent, all over the South, basically, and Surrey. And that was really, we do one-on-one training. We offer, like, elite-level training, which I do and some of my colleagues do, and also training for, you know, beginners or people just want to build confidence. So that's it. So I've been doing that for 12 years, so that's really helped mould my experience and my methodology, and I've taken working in academy football and working with grassroots players and come up with this idea about, you know, how to improve players technically and which giving them stuff they can then take into the games. And mypersonalfootballcoach.com is really that, is, you know, this is the end result of all of this.
Yeah, so I've read that you get players into trials, because you some of your success stories or?
Yeah, so we've got lots of success stories. So recently Dom, the boy I coached, he's got into the Wales squad, under 15 squad.
Yeah.
I've got players at Tottenham, at Arsenal, at Chelsea, Leyton Orient. So what happens is players come to me and they say, you know, I want to be an academy player. So we train them and I say to them, okay, and I'll give them an honest evaluation. We train them. I say, okay, you've got an opportunity. And then what we do is if they do that, we work towards a goal. And then if I think they're ready, then maybe I'll reach out to my network of people in different clubs or academies and try and support them into getting them a trial, or maybe they've got a trial coming up and I'll train them to a trial. So, I mean, what if sort of my speciality or what I'm doing good is when, you know, they're preparing for a trial, it's about giving them some things that's going to help them be effective and successful in that situation. And kind of help them stand out from the crowd, and so giving them a few tools they can use to try and increase their chances of being successful.
There's been a lot of reports around that people think that they get it too easy as young players these days. Do you think that's true? Or is...
You know what, I have this conversation a lot with people, and I think there's something about football, right, where people say, oh, you know, football is just, you know, it's got to be, you know, really muddy park, it's got to be, you know, really rubbish facilities, like, you know, but then you look at other sports and other elite environments, it doesn't have to be like that, you know, you should, you know, have like a world-class, you know, environment to try and produce world-class players. Now, you know, there's obviously questions about, you know, the financial incentives players are getting at an early age. Yeah, I think that, you know, these are problems for all people to deal with, whether it be the clubs or the players themselves and their parents. They've got to try and see academy's responsibilities to try and prepare players for this sudden, you know, wealth stream or money stream. But, you know, I don't think there's a thing about players have to have it really, you know, really hard. There has to be challenges, but there's other ways to stress and challenge players, and that's what, you know, that's what academies are there for.
I think that probably comes from that. When you get the old players who say, "Oh, we had to clean everybody's boots," and
of course. Listen, I mean, you know, and I'm not saying that was wrong or right, but I'm just saying, you know, I think, you know, there's, you know, for me, if you look at, you know, any other world class sport, they've got world class environments, and these, you know, supposed to foster world class competitors. So,
yeah. So how important is it for young players to have a life away from the game, do you think?
I think it's massively important. If you look at research, it suggests that actually, you know, young players especially, that's really important that they're not just doing football, that they're doing another sport. So that's to help develop their, you know, their body for football. So it's important that they, you know, have, you know, some sort of variability in their training, so they do another sport. It's basically, that's, you know, it's really important. Mm. And also, it's important. You know, it's a bit of a juggling act really, because for me, it's really important that you don't say to players, look, it's a possible dream, you're never going to happen, concentrate on something else. So you want to encourage players that if they want to fulfil their dreams and chase that, you know, all important thing of becoming a pro footballer, yeah, support them, do that. But also remind them, say, you know, school is massive, you know, massive important, has to be number one, you have to have a life out of it, and you have to think about other things and, you know, help you prepare for life, basically. That's what you're trying to do is, you know, as a... when you're working with players, is produce good, you know, rounded human beings, not just good footballers.
Have you got any other questions, Dan?
I'm interested in when you said about American coaching. Do you reckon there's a disconnect because of the fact there is no academies, that almost all the talent will get to a certain age or level and plateau, because then where do they go after that? There's like a disconnect between there and, say, Major League Soccer, or is that something that's changing?
Yeah, now? I mean, I think it's changing. I mean, it's been over 10 years since I've been there, so I've still got a lot of friends there, but I think now what they have is, you know, the US Football Association has like programs in place, like the Olympic Development Program, it's called, I think, ODP. And so there are some elite sort of programs in place there. And I mean, when my thoughts when I was over there was there was so much talent there, so much more talent there. But my initial thing was, I thought just because there was an academy structure and maybe the MLS just wasn't big. So when they became older, they just maybe lost interest or got lost in the system. But, you know, the advantage they have there is their great college system, you know, which they do, where players go to college and get an education, but they're training every day. So you almost have, like, you know, players in a professional type environment in colleges, training every day, travelling around the country, playing at the better universities. That's, you know, a real advantage. But yeah, it's a tricky one to say, because you sort of think it's inevitable that they will become a power in football just because of the sheer amount of people who play it. You know, I think it's the biggest participation sport in America in terms of people who are playing it, but there seems to be a slight disconnect of players going through. But their youth teams are very strong at the moment in the 17s and 18s, from what I understand.
Because the structure's not in place, is that not to America's detriment? Because then the talent would then go to Europe to then build their careers, and then they'll only come home once they're sort of almost failed in Europe. So sort of, don't they need those measures in place to be the
detriment? Well, you could sort of look at it the other way. A lot of people say, you know, academies are so bad, academies don't do nothing, academies stunt creativity, so maybe you've got all these players who are playing their own way, you know, maybe why aren't they creating more players? But yeah, you know, it's you know, in theory, players could travel abroad and still develop, and, you know, they could develop abroad, you know, and then come back and play in America. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's a tricky one to say they need to have an academy system, but, you know, I suppose they have to figure that one out themselves.
Yeah, Yeah, I suppose there's no right or wrong answer, is there? I mean, you can apply different logic to different situations. Otherwise, if there's one identical reason or sort of way to do it, everyone would be doing, wouldn't they? So there's no right or wrong.
I think this is the great debate at the moment we're having with, you know, there's so many different ideas about what to do things, and, you know, there's great things going on around the world, and, you know, that's the thing. It's like, it's about finding our own identity and developing the players how we want to do it. You just need to find a way that works so we can, you know, win a World Cup.
Do you think England struggles with identity problems still, or are we just finally carving out our own? Because it's always a mimic, you know, mimic Germany, mimic Spain. Have we finally pushed that aside and starting to carve our own?
I think the problem is, this is just my opinion, personal opinion, I think we came out of an era where English football was very much revolved around long ball football. This is, and this came from the Football Association. You know, so Charles Hughes famously said, you know, trying to get the forward quick as possible. So we played, you know, had generations of, you know, teams playing like that. And so I think we're coming out of that, and now the FA is trying to think about, okay, let's create you're trying to create an identity from scratch, really. And some of the England DNA work is excellent. I've seen recently now that coming out, they've created an idea of, you know, what sort of players we want to create, and then they've just got to try and feed that into the grassroots and into the systems. But you can understand, like, you know, people's scepticism after, you know, saying, okay, we've had, you know, 20, 30 years odd of, you know, being told just put it in the mixer because that's the best way to score. So, you know, it's a process, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's no overnight fix, is it? It's definitely like a generational shift. It's going to, if it does come to fruition, it's not going to be in the next sort of 2 to 4 years, is it? It's going to take a much longer process.
Well, I watched the England under-16s and in a tournament in America, lucky and fortunate, because a lot of the players I used to coach at Spurs were playing, and they played Brazil, and they played Brazil off the park, and it was almost, they literally played like Brazil, and, you know, and Brazil played like England used to play. England had all the possession, really comfortable on the ball, stayed on the ball, really controlled, you know, just toyed with them almost, and it was refreshing to see. And this, you know, that's what I'm talking about now, the good work that's going on, and these, you know, the young, you know, in the development system here, this, you know, we, like I say, academies get knocked a lot, and but there's some great players coming through now, and the people, Gareth Southgate has, you know, sorted out the FA youth teams, and they're playing the right way as well, and it's, you know, you're starting to see the fruition of that, of all these young English players that are coming through now, these young, exciting, attacking English players that are now coming into the Premier League.
And the future is bright after all, then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so before you go, do you want to plug your social media?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter, MyFootballCoach, and Instagram as well, and MyPersonalFootballCoach.com on Facebook as well, so it'd be great to see you all there.
Yeah, so all the links will be in the description below this interview. So I really enjoyed speaking here today. I'd love to have you on again in the future, maybe on our main podcast. So.
Lovely, yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys, and yeah, you know, onwards and upwards. Yeah.
Cheers for your time, Saul.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you. Bye.
Cheers, bye.